Today on Summit Life with J.D. Greer.
God is showing that when we disobey Him, the designer of creation, that life and nature unravels. You see, these commandments are the restoration of shalom. It's restoration of the rule of God. It is God's peace and harmony in your lives. Thus, obeying these commandments is freedom.
Welcome to Summit Life with Pastor J.D. Greer. A lot of people see the Bible as just a book of rules to follow. Do this and don't do that. The Old Testament can be especially intimidating, even for those of us who believe, because it seems to be full of impossible standards we can never live up to. Well, today, Pastor J.D. explains the true purpose behind all of God's standards in a message from a series we're beginning today called This Is What the Heart Looks Like. J.D. originally preached this sermon several years ago, and he titled it God's Laws and Our Lives.
So if you have a Bible, take it out. We're going to go to Exodus, the book of Exodus, so you can try to find that over the next few minutes if you want. It's the second book in the Bible, so it shouldn't be hard. I picked up a book a while back in Barnes & Noble. It was not a Christian book. In fact, the author describes himself as Jewish, though he says, I'm really an agnostic. In fact, he says, and I quote, I'm Jewish, but I'm Jewish in the same way that Olive Garden is an Italian restaurant. So if that helps you. The premise of this book is that this guy, who has no substantial religious upbringing at all, sets out to read the Bible for the first time and attempt to follow every single rule in that Bible to the letter. It's called The Year of Living Biblically. So the first thing he does is he reads the entire Bible cover to cover for a month, and he writes down every single directive that he finds, whether they're big or small. So that includes things like the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not kill, but it also includes lesser known Old Testament laws for diet and ritual cleanliness. And then he journals for the course of a year his experiences obeying every letter of the law in the Bible. Now, as you can imagine, the outcome of this is pretty entertaining. For example, Leviticus says that men should leave the edges of their beards unshaven. So this guy stops shaving and grows a beard, a massive beard that makes him look like a member of ZZ Top or something. It's pretty funny. He stops wearing clothes that are made of any mixed fibers because Leviticus forbids that. He learns to play a 10-string harp. He refuses to shake hands with women who might be ceremonially unclean, right? Which had to be awkward, because how do you tell? You know, like you got on a short skirt, you're probably unclean. I'm not touching you, you know, I don't know. And this is one of my favorites, though. He tries to fling tiny pebbles at people without them noticing in order to stone adulterers. This whole process almost drove his poor wife crazy for a year, and it's an entertaining book. But the book reveals, I think, how most people in our culture view the commandments, right? And this book kind of gives you a picture of it. The commandments are outdated, they're backwards, they're archaic, they're restrictive. That is certainly how I felt as a teenager. I didn't want to walk with God because I thought it would restrict my freedom. I may not have been able to state it or write a book about it like this guy did, but I just didn't want to know that much about God because I was afraid he was going to tell me something else I needed to change that I didn't want to change. And for a while, I didn't even want to be around people who knew God and walked with God because I was afraid they were just going to make me feel guilty and ruin my life. Some of you probably like that. Some of you are not excited about being here this morning. Maybe you're here because a friend's been bugging you to come, and you are here just to get them off your back and shut them up. But you don't want to get too close to this whole experience because you know, next thing you know, if you're not careful, you're going to be in some Jesus camp, religious cage, wearing corny Christian t-shirts like Jesus is my homeboy and saying God bless you to people when they sneeze. And you're like, that's just not me. I don't want to be a part of that. Others of you, while you might be Christians and you might know you're supposed to be part of a church, you got this sense of dread during my sermons because you're afraid that I'm going to say something else that you're not doing right. And you're just not excited about learning more ways that you stink as a person. You're not excited about me hearing you tell a bunch tell you a bunch more stuff that you ought to be doing that you're not doing. Some of the law you didn't know was in the Bible, and now you're going to have to feel guilty about that too. You're kind of like, ignorance is probably best. The less I know, the less I had to feel guilty about. Right? What I want to try to show you is I want to start a series that shows you that those perspectives are exactly the opposite of what the Ten Commandments really are all about. I want to show you that the Ten Commandments are not a path to bondage. They are the path to freedom. And that is because they reveal to us what our hearts are like. These commandments reveal to us how our hearts are designed. These commandments are like the owner's manual for our souls. I know some of you aren't into owner's manuals, and you never read them for any of your appliances, which is why the DVD player you bought 10 years ago still flashes 12 o'clock midnight, because you can't figure out how to set the clock, and you're not looking, right? I know that you're not into owner's manuals, but this one is really important, because this is about your soul's happiness for eternity. Furthermore, these commandments show us what is wrong with our hearts. And then these commandments give us clues as to how to fix our dysfunctional, screwed up, unhappy, unsettled hearts. So that's the title of our series. This is what the heart looks like. And this is going to be life and salvation to some of you. Here is a promise. If you understand these commandments properly, they're going to be the gateway to you to fulfillment, to purpose, to freedom, and to joy. I promise you that. In fact, I promise that because God promised it. When God gave these commandments, he said, Deuteronomy 32:47, these are not empty words for you. This is not religious trivia. These are not rules that I made up because I want to ruin your lives. These are your very life. So in this first introductory message, I want to try to show you what role the commandments are to play in your life. I'm not going to cover any of the commandments today. I'm going to try to take a step back and say, this is the role they're supposed to play. Because just as important as knowing what the commandments are, you need to know how to use them. You see, even if you can name all 10 commandments, which 92% of Americans, by the way, cannot do. But even if you could name all 10, if you don't know how to use them properly, you're going to mess everything up. Not knowing these commandments, not knowing how these commandments were to be used, was what caused the first century Palestinian Jews to crucify Jesus. I mean, they knew the commandments backwards and forwards. They could quote them to you from any different direction. So they knew the commandments, but they didn't know how the commandments were supposed to function in their life, and that messed everything up. So what I'm going to do today is I'm going to show you the four things that the law or the Ten Commandments are supposed to do for us. We're going to draw from a number of different passages because I'm going to take a step back and show you through the Bible how different Bible writers have talked about the commandments and the role they're supposed to play in your life. Okay, so we're going to start in the book of Deuteronomy, or Exodus. You already looked at Exodus. I'm going to start in the book of Deuteronomy, which is the fifth book of the Bible, and then we're just going to start jumping all over the place. All right, so Deuteronomy is the first place we're going to go. Do you know, by the way, that every major awakening in our country has started with a preaching of the law that we're going to get into the next 10 weeks? So this is going to be good. Right? Deuteronomy. Now, as you're going to Deuteronomy, give you a little note, editor's note here. Deuteronomy is actually Moses' commentary on the law. It's kind of like on a DVD when you have the option to watch the movie with the editor's like notes, which is usually two boring guys making random comments about the movie that nobody cares about. You're like, yeah, that guy's jacket, it's actually my jacket because he poured coffee on his that morning. And you're like, who cares? Turn this stuff off. You know, it's really annoying. Well, that's what Deuteronomy is, except it's not annoying, okay? Because This is Moses' commentary on the law. It's the editor's cut. Him giving you commentary on it. So it's really important because he shows you a lot of things about the law that you really need to know. In fact, Deuteronomy literally means second law. Deuteros, number two, Deutero, no mean law. The second giving of the law. So in chapter 6, Moses goes over all 10 commandments, and then he says, verse 20, when your son asks you in time to come, Dad, what's the meaning of these testimonies and the statutes and the rules that the Lord our God has commanded you? Then you shall say to your son, well, you see, son, we were Pharaoh's slaves in Egypt. You never knew that because you were born after we were delivered. And the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand. Man, you should have seen it. It was awesome. He brought us to the land that he swore to give to our fathers. Verse 24, And then the Lord commanded us to do all these statutes to fear the Lord our God. Look at this next phrase. For our good always, that he might, here's your next word, preserve us alive. If you underline stuff in your Bible, underline that. Right, if you don't have a pen, take out a tube of lipstick and smear it. Prick your finger, dab it in blood, whatever it takes. Preserve us alive as we are this day. You see, Israel had been in slavery and God brought them out. These commandments, listen to this, were what God gave them to keep them free. Not make them free, keep them free. Here's point number one. These commandments keep us out of slavery, not lead us into it. These commandments keep us out of slavery, not lead us into it. Most people in our culture, as I showed you, think exactly the opposite. But these commandments are what God gave to Israel after bringing them out of bondage to keep them free. To understand the significance of this, we need to do a little theology lesson. Okay? Exodus is the second book in a five-volume series known as the Pentateuch. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. Exodus is the second book in that volume. Now, it has one series editor, a guy named Moses. So to understand the significance, you got to go back to the first volume where Moses, in the book of Genesis, describes the original creation of mankind. God creates the world as a reflection of himself, and then he keeps using one word over and over and over and over and over again to describe his creation. Do you remember what that one word was? Good. That's right. It's good. It is good. Creation was in a state of perfect peace and harmony that Jewish theologians call, my favorite Hebrew word, shalom. Isn't that a great Hebrew word? It just sounds refreshing. Shalom. Say it. Shalom. Say it like you really want to be refreshed. Shalom. It just sounds like cool water rushing over my head. Shalom. So God creates the world with shalom. And it's awesome. But you know the story. Man rejects God's rule and the creation falls into total disarray. Sin brings a curse with it. And so everything starts to unravel. First, we lose our relationship with God. Second, our relationships with each other begin to unravel. So we have the first set of brothers arguing and one of them killing the other one. Our bodies are cursed. And so they start to age and deteriorate and succumb to disease and get pudgy and lose hair and lose our teeth and all kinds of stuff. Right, that's part of the curse. No offense if you don't have any hair. Right, so all this is unraveling. The earth itself is cursed, and there are thorns and thistles and tsunamis. Well, later in Genesis, God chooses to save the world through the descendants of a particular man named Abraham. His descendants, Abraham's descendants, are called the children of Israel. But God lets the children of Israel, after they've grown to a large number, about a million of them, he lets them fall into slavery for 425 years in Egypt. Which may seem like a strange way to save them, but we learn later that the reason for this is that this political slavery was supposed to give a picture of our spiritual slavery to sin. You see, when mankind rejected God, he thought he was going to be free, but he ended up going into bondage, into slavery, because everybody worships something. And when man rejected the worship of God, he started to worship himself, worship money, worship sex, worship food, worship family, whatever. And whatever you worship puts you into a kind of bondage. So this political slavery is giving them a picture of the spiritual slavery that they are in. So after 425 years, God raises up this stuttering, mousy-voiced guy named Moses to deliver Israel. Y'all, we've got the totally wrong picture of Moses. People picture Moses as this 6'5", you know, high school quarterback kind of athlete who walks in with this big, studly, Charlton Heston-esque, you know, Val Kilmer kind of voice, looks at Pharaoh, puts his finger in his face and says, God says, let my people go. Right? But that is not how Moses was. In fact, one of the descriptions of Moses, you remember this, is that he is weak in speech. He didn't tell us what that means. Maybe he stuttered. Maybe he had a real feminine high voice. Maybe he spoke with a lisp. We don't know. But I can guarantee you it did not sound like, let my people go. It was probably more like, let my people go, you know, to Pharaoh. And Pharaoh looks back at him and says, and why should I do that? And Moses' response is classic. Moses says, because my stick turns into a snake. Watch. Turns into a snake. And Pharaoh's like, gets his magicians and they come in and their sticks turn into snakes. And Pharaoh's like, this is not going to happen. So God sends on Pharaoh and Egypt The plagues. Now, Hebrew scholars have long noted that the 10 plagues are too systematic just to be random displays of God's power. If God's point was simply to show that he existed and that he was powerful, he could have had Moses walk in and turn some of Pharaoh's soldiers into tiny little green men and squash a few of them under his feet. Look at Pharaoh and put him in the Darth Vader chokehold and say, you know, thou art next. And Pharaoh would have gotten the points. But that is not what the plagues are about. The plagues follow a very logical progression. Hebrew scholars point this out, right? Think about it. The Nile turns to blood. Well, that destroys the natural ecosystem of the Nile. Out of the Nile come the frogs. Then from the frogs come the gnats. And from the gnats come disease. What's happening? Creation is unraveling. It's the exact opposite of Genesis 1, which is why you got to put this book together with Genesis. In Genesis 1, you've got disorder going into order as God creates it and creates shalom. Now you've got order descending into chaos. In Genesis, you've got God taking the bad and turning it into good, and now you've got the good turning into bad. What is the point? God is showing that when we disobey him, the designer of creation, that life and nature unravels. You see, these commandments are the restoration of shalom. It's restoration of the rule of God. It is God's peace and harmony in your lives. Thus, obeying these commandments is freedom. Because these commandments are how you are designed to work. This is how your heart is designed. So obeying these commands puts you in harmony with creation and its creator and lets you live in that condition that God calls shalom. Think of it like a fish. You don't set a fish free by taking it out of the water and saying, poor little fish, all you've ever had is the ocean to swim around in. We want you to experience what we get to see up here on land. So we're going to set you free by taking you out of the water and putting you on the highway. You're not setting a fish free when you do that. You're killing the fish when you do that. The fish is designed to be in the water, and the fish is freest when it is in the place that God designed it to be. Does that make sense? Well, that's how you and I are too. Now, some of you are like, but wait a minute. No. They don't feel like freedom to me. They feel restrictive. The reason you say that is because there is this assumption in our culture. It's widespread. You see it all through Hollywood, all through our music. And the assumption is that if something doesn't feel right immediately, it's got to be wrong. Woody Allen probably said it best. He said, the heart wants what it wants. And if you deny the heart what it wants, then you're betraying your heart and you'll never be happy. Y'all, even though this is a widespread belief, it's pretty absurd when you think about it, right? I mean, it really, just put a little thought to it. It's pretty absurd. I'll prove it to you, right? In the morning, when your alarm clock goes off, what feels right at that moment? Anybody in here just leap out of bed, 5:30, you're like, man, I can't wait for the day. So excited about this. Don't raise your hand because we'll all hate you, okay? It's not normal. You're like, 5 more minutes. Where did it go? And you reach over and you slap your alarm clock. 5 more minutes. And then you do it again in 5 minutes. And you keep slapping it. And I don't know. Something wrong with my alarm clock. I feel like my alarm clock is possessed. Because I feel like every once in a while, after I do that 2 or 3 times, it'll just cut itself off altogether. Has that ever happened to you? And you wake up like 3 hours later at 9:30 and you're like, what just happened? It's like the alarm clock. It's like, oh, you're not going to slap me around. I'll show you. I just cut off. I ain't working. I take all this abuse, you know. But I read the magazine the other day. This is great. I really want one of these. A guy who graduated from MIT just developed an alarm clock he calls Clocky. It's a normal-looking alarm clock, except the alarm is this hideous sound that's like, ah! You know, something really, like, absurd. And that's not that big of a deal because, you know, all of our alarm clocks make bad sounds. But this one, the moment it goes off and starts making that sound, which you cannot turn down and you cannot change, the moment it does that, these wheels pop up out of the bottom, right, and start to turn really fast, so it goes off of your dresser onto the floor and begins to race around the room. And you got to get up and you got to, like, chase this thing. So by the time you caught it, it's guaranteed you're not going back to sleep. Now, why do we do that? Because what feels right in the moment is not really what leads us to freedom. What happens if you stay in bed all day? All right, well, A, you lose your job. B, even if you don't lose your job, right, because you live in your mama's basement and you play video games all day, even if that's you, then you feel sluggish all day, right? You sleep at 10 o'clock every day. You just feel like trash. What you learn is that doing what your body wants to do isn't always the pathway to freedom. And sometimes you have to tell your body no because you know the pathway to freedom is something different. The way for me to have real freedom in life is to get up when I'm supposed to, go to work, and keep myself healthy. Or think about it in another form. Think about when you exercise. When you are exercising, everything in your body tells you to stop, doesn't it? But you got to tell your body to shut up and do the extra set, because if you don't, you know you're going to die of a heart attack. And here's the crazy thing. Some of us pay people to yell at us to make us exercise. I pay a person to yell at me because I know if he doesn't yell at me, I'll never do the extra stuff. You go to a restaurant, suddenly your nostrils are filled with unbelievable smells of steak and bread, and your body says, yes, this is what I want. But then sometimes you got to say, no, I will be disciplined, and I will go to the salad bar, and I will stuff my plate with alfalfa sprouts and garbanzo beans and radishes, and that's what I'm going to eat. That never really happens to me. I'm just using it as an illustration. The point is, we all know that what our body desires is not always best. And so we subject the aberrant desires of our heart to our minds, because our minds know what will give us true freedom. Now, here's a question. Does it make any sense to do that for the body and not for the soul? You see, medical doctors may have studied how the physical body works, but God understands how the soul works, how your heart works.
That was pastor and author J.D. Greer on Summit Life. If you missed part of today's message or want to listen again, you can listen free of charge online at jdgreer.com. Pastor J.D., today we started a new series about the Ten Commandments called This Is What the Heart Looks Like. What role do the Ten Commandments have in our lives?
You know, the Ten Commandments play a couple of very vital roles in our lives. I mean, first, they show us who God is and how He created us to be. Secondly, they reveal to us how messed up our heart actually is.
Yeah.
In the first way, they're a guide for us. In the second way, they're a mirror that shows us the distortion of our heart. Six of the Ten Commandments are about honoring God, our relationship with God, and then the other four about our relationships with other people. And it shows us that when we get our vertical relationship with God taken care of, then a lot of the problems we have in our horizontal relationships, our relationships with other people, they begin to take care of themselves. And of course, that was a big idea in our first love series, is that ultimately, whether we're, you know, it's because we're unhappy as single people, or because we're conflict in marriage, or whatever situation, the problem in our horizontal relationship ultimately comes from not having Jesus and the gospel in the right place in our lives.
Yeah.
So that's why we're continuing to put out this Summit Life resource, First Love, because it guides you into some of these questions about why is it that I'm so unhappy in my singleness? Why is it that I feel like I need the love of another person in order to feel complete? Why don't I feel that in Jesus? What does it mean to be complete in Jesus? Why is it that my spouse's flaws bother me so much that I feel like the only way to happiness is to leave the marriage, to go toward a new marriage? Why do I find it so difficult to forgive? What you'll find is that ultimately all of these answers begin. They begin in understanding who God is, understanding how He feels about us. And as you find completion in the love of God, you become a complete person that is able to love better.
Yeah.
So that's the union between these two series. This is what the heart looks like. This is what God wants our hearts to look like. This is where we need the gospel's help. And when we do, we'll find that these horizontal relationships begin to take care of themselves.
Thanks, JD. To help you build healthy gospel-centered relationships, we've created an exclusive new resource. It's a personal Bible study called First Love. The interactive questions and insightful commentaries will help you think through how you can form the relationships you desire. The Bible study comes with our thanks when you donate today to support this ministry, so that more people can dive into the gospel with us on a daily basis. The suggested donation is $25 or more, and every penny helps us reach more people with these messages. Join that mission by giving today, and make sure you request your copy of First Love. Call 866-335-5220. That's 866-335-5220. Or you can request a study when you donate online at jdgreer.com. I'm Derek DeLane. So glad to have you with us. And be sure to tune in next time as we learn about God's laws in our lives. That's Thursday on Summit Life with J.D. Greer. Today's program was produced and sponsored by J.D. Greer Ministries.